tsunami's back, bitches.
Took you long enough.
This has been an experience we will never forget.
This ain't no time to go all mushy.
Don't lecture me. I've waited long enough.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 441 of the Tsunami Escape podcast. I'm C. Kohler, and with me tonight is Seda.
Hello.
And Crocodile.
Hello.
Well, guys, not a whole lot of news this week, but we do have a couple of minor things. The first is we will briefly talk about the game review that we did have this past weekend, which was for the game Sword of the Sea. Anyone know much about this?
All I know is that it's about a 4 or 5 hour kind of like adventure game. I know it's got like journey type comparisons and inspirations to it. And I know when it came out in this last month in August, and it reviewed really, really well. Apparently it's kind of short, you know, for that sort of game, but it's more like an experience type of game. You know, you kind of play it once and you experience it once. But yeah, it's from, let me see, the developer is Giant Squid.
They did Abzu
and the Pathless.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, the parallels to Journey are pretty unmistakable. Not a bad game to make an homage to, but yeah, right. I can totally see it. I think even in the review, they talk about how, like, you know, it's a pretty chill, laid-back game.
Yeah.
And it got the customary 8.0 review.
Yeah, so like, I don't know. that doesn't give us a lot of
comment. I don't know anything about the game whatsoever. So it's like, yep, that was a game. It looks pretty. And it got an 8. And
yeah, the problem with the, this is, I'm kind of being cheeky here, but I think we're on the same level, Seda, is that the 8.0 reviews that come from Tsunami at this point are kind of like meaningless to a certain extent. They never review anything that doesn't get an average of 8. So it's like,
is this good or bad?
Almost a pointless score, because it's like, okay, they tend to pick games they like on the whole, which is, that makes sense. I don't have I'm not saying they should rate, you know, or review bad games, but like when all their games are an 8, or, you know, sometimes they vary. It's 8.5 or a 9, rarely a 9, but it's almost like the score is almost kind of pointless. I kind of wonder if we've ever gotten anything below a 6 or anything, you know.
Whoever does the reviews for Tsunami, if they ever play a bad game, they're probably just, they don't want to like put together a review for it. They're just like, forget it. So
yeah, I don't think they're all about bad vibes. I think it's more about promoting things they like. And so I understand that, but I'd like to see them promote a game they think is a 10, you know. I'm not sure they'll ever go there, but yeah. It looked fine. One other piece of news we have here that Seda brought to light, and maybe he can speak a little too more too. I don't know if you can, but apparently Paramount is in the news preparing to make a bid to purchase Warner Brothers Discovery, which I do believe Adult Swim will fall under the Warner Brothers Discovery group.
Yeah, so I'm a little confused. So there's like Warner Bros. Discovery, and then they were going to like split. Here I'm opening up a NPR article from a couple months ago. They're going to split into two companies, which was like HBO, Warner Bros. Movies and Television Studios, and then the other side would be like the cable business. So that's CNN, TBS, TNT, and Discovery, according to this article. So I don't know. When Paramount is going to bid for it, are they bidding for the HBO movie stuff, or are they bidding for the cable business stuff? I'm not sure.
Yeah. And the I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. The article specifically says Warner Brothers Discovery. Now, it doesn't say like Warner Brothers / Discovery. It's like saying the Discovery owned by Warner Brothers. So I'm going to infer.
Well, I don't think the split happened. It's a little confusing. They're like going to be split, but I don't know. I don't think the split has never necessarily titled what the two distinct companies are going to be called. And then is this bid necessarily for both parts or half of it? I'm not sure. So it just basically, the idea is Toonami has already fell victim to, you know, kind of just being caught up in the waves of acquisitions and whatever, with Warner being kind of just thrown around to, from company to company, and like, well, here's, there might be another one in the, on the horizon here. So who knows what that means?
Yeah, we went from,
I need to look this up.
I mean, I would just say, I don't think Paramount, even the broader kind of happenings elsewhere in the entertainment industry and the political environment and whatnot, I do not think Paramount is what I would say a trust buyer or someone I'd like to see purchase Warner or and such type Toonami and Cartoon Network and all that stuff. So my inclination is to hope that this doesn't come to pass, but I guess I have no influence over it, whether it does or does not.
I don't have anything against Paramount outside of the say that I don't really watch much of their content. Paramount does own Star Trek. And mm-hmm. while I'm not a fan of new Trek, I am a big fan of their old, of the, you know, TNG era stuff. But outside of that, I don't really watch anything on Paramount. And obviously Sony and Warner Brothers are both bigger. At least I think they're bigger. They've always seemed bigger to me.
I think Paramount is deceptively big.
Is it true? Reason. Okay.
I don't know.
My issue isn't the content. It's more like who runs Paramount. I do not trust them, and I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, I'm not a, like I said, I'm not a fan of New Trek, and the people they put in charge of that has not been well. Although, I mean, we've had, what's his name, Slazlov or whatever for a while now. That's not been very good either, right?
Yeah, it would just kind of suck if, like, Toonami seems to be kind of hitting a stride again. And it would just suck if, you know, a year from now or whatever, it's just kind of all upended again, you know?
Yeah. And again, I was going to say this, obviously, this is all just rumors right now. There's no...
Yeah, and none of us are experts at this, so we don't know what we're talking about.
Yeah, but... All right, but just to have it in the back of the mind, we may hear something down the road about this, and then that could ultimately affect the block lineup at some point. I mean, who knows what the acquisition and licensing kerfuffle will be if another change like this happens. We have no idea. We can only speculate, and it's not even worth speculating yet. So we'll just leave it at that. Okay. So with that out of the way, why don't we talk about the actual block? So then we will begin with Daima. Dragon Ball Daima, episode 13, Surprise. Okay, what's the surprise? Is it just that the place is big?
I guess. Oh no, we our engine failed and we crash land on this planet for this little one-off side story.
Episode. Yeah, this is basically Goku and the Beanstalk, basically. Like, that's it. It's
Honey, I Shrunk the Saiyans.
Yeah, I am not against this. I thought it was actually a really fun episode. I like stories like this. But it is completely feels like it's not important or anything. And the whole resolution is pretty much done at the end of the episode.
Yeah, it's I don't mean this as a criticism, but it's the type of episode you could remove it entirely and like nothing. It seems like nothing would be like lost in the continuity of things.
I mean, I would say shutting down Sir Warp would be
well, that was the one address. Thing that happened. Yes, that is worth noting. Yeah, I guess I should talk about that. So why don't I go through the rundown real quick? You guys cool with that?
Go for it.
Okay. So this, like Crocodile saying, the episode actually begins. This is like the first 3 minutes of the episode, and then it's the rest of its giant land. But anyway, Goma is freaking out, and he basically asks Degasu to go disable Sir Warp, which I think is something that's like hasn't been done in like forever. And so in a very comical way, Degasu goes into another room and there's just a big lever and he pulls it. And then you just sort of see Sir Warp just sort of like go to sleep, basically.
Yeah, it's just a big lever on the wall.
Yeah, pretty funny. Anyway, the plane continues to have problems. And it crashes on Planet Mega, and Nezu, is that the guy's name? The Niru New something, the old guy. Anyway, old Namekian guy is like, oh no, I know where we are. This is really dangerous. We need to leave. And it's basically a planet that is just giant size. And I mean like really giant, like they are like the size of like cockroaches to everything. Like, so this, they get attacked by giant hamsters, which is, you know, I saw a lot of like Hamtaro.
Of course, the Hamtaro jokes, like, of course.
Which was fun. And they actually really looked like Hamtaro hamsters.
Sometimes.
I mean, like, it's just only the shape vicious of them. Yeah. Anyway, they fight those off, hamster attack. And yeah, while this is going on, Bulma and Panzi are trying to fix the ship. And they talk something about this like substance called Magilite. And I don't know, it's just some kind of rare mineral. And it sounds important, but I don't really understand what the conversation, I mean, it feels like it's exposition for something.
Wasn't it about a power source for their plane or?
I don't know. I don't think they did anything with it. They were talking about like it's something far away, like they can get to it and it's rare.
And it also like surrounds one of the planets in a way. So that's why it always looked bright.
Yeah, it's something to do with changing the color of the sky. And it was like, it seems like they were making it important.
Well, it's like an energy source that exists in the demon world that also powers the plane. So it's like it's some like technology or energy that is unnatural to Earth, and you know, something that Bulma would have no knowledge of, but it somehow it works in the environment of the demon world, and you know, they've been able to use it in their technology.
Right. Yes. Exactly. I mean, really the ultimate thing I took, I mean, I don't know if the Magilite stuff's going to come back, but the main thing I took about away from this scene was that it's just like a really nice, like Bulma and Panzi sort of like bonding scene, basically becoming friends. Meanwhile, Glorio sneaks off and has a secret phone call with Arinsu, letting her know that they're on their way and that she will soon have all three Dragon Balls. And right before the commercial break, they hear a big thumping, and sure enough, one of the giants that lives in this land, which are called Megaths, comes walking in, and they're like, oh my god, it's a child Megath. But I mean, like, again, he's like, I don't know, 200-300 feet tall. He's like super huge. To the point he doesn't even notice them, you know.
And he has with him his puppy.
Yes. Giant pupper. Come back from the commercial break, and that they have to kind of fight the dog. Like, it's sniffing around. It can smell them. It's just like they're like little insects or whatever. Goku pulls off like a Kamehameha and hits it. Right before that, too, that he like lands on its fur and there's like giant ticks and everything. It's like everything's just giant, but it's fun. The Kamehameha does knock the dog back enough that the big Megath kind of notices them. Goku, Vegeta, and Piccolo all work together to fly around and try to keep the giant occupied while they're repairing the ship, trying to keep it away from the ship so it doesn't crush it. I think it eventually ends up like picking it up or poking at it with a stick or something. And then they eventually get away just in time, and they fly away. And, you know, the big school kid, you know, is just sort of like, huh? You know, it doesn't really ever talk or anything. It's just like really slow-witted. The old Namekian guy is like, oh, at least we landed on planet Mega and not planet Gigas, where everything is even bigger.
Yeah, he said at the beginning of the episode that this was the second most dangerous planet to land on, with the first most dangerous planet being just bigger. Everything's bigger, apparently.
Yeah. And then I think that's just kind of like a one-off remark where they're like, well, it's the demon realm. It's crazy.
Just missing that laugh track at the
end.
Yeah,
laugh track. Close to credits.
And I for a moment kind of thought like, man, this would change the balance of everything in this world to have these super giant people. But then they kind of hand wave it by being like, they don't really, they're not interested in the rest of the demon realm. They don't think about it. It's like, okay.
Yeah, they're just living their life on their planet, which is normal size to them. They don't care about anything else.
Why do they care about these little bugs going around doing stuff? Yeah.
I mean, that's not unfair. Like, we humans don't care about what ants are doing, right? Like,
exactly.
That's not unfair.
I haven't yet had an ant hit me with a Kamehameha, but yeah, I don't tend to think about them too much. That's the episode. It was fun. Fun little adventure. That's one of the things that this show does pretty well, I think, is just have this adventure vibe to it.
Yeah, pretty like generally low stakes episode. One person mentioned in the thread that this episode did have some really good use of like color and art, mm-hmm. you know, with the big plants and grass and some creatures and color and things like that. So,
yeah.
You know, it was, they just kind of had fun with it. It was, yeah, kind of I don't want to say a relaxing episode, but, you know, just kind of a low stakes, not plot centric, not high energy type episode. So.
But it even tells you, even during the downtime, the production never falters. So,
yeah.
It looked really good. It was fun. And then, it's just sort of fun to see these characters dealing with this. And I have no idea. Obviously, I haven't seen this, but I have really idea of like, no expectation they'll ever see this again. This is like a one-off thing, so could be wrong, but unlikely. But
you'll be surprised in the finale of this episode when one of the Megas is going to come to the rescue.
Yeah, who knows?
So I mean, finale again, of season.
It's like I said, it's like it's almost too like plot breaking to introduce these things. But again, I think they just are kind of like, well, as long as you stay away from there, nothing will ever come of it, you know.
Now, remind me, when we actually getting back to the actual plot, they're trying to get to the first demon world now, right? So yeah. Pretty soon here, they're going to get to Sir Warpin. They're going to be like, something's off.
Yeah, they're kind of stranded at the moment. They can't get, well, I mean, not necessarily. Well,
they don't know yet, right? They don't, you know.
They don't even know. Well, no.
The next episode preview kind of goes into that.
Oh, I didn't see this.
You see them trying to cross demon worlds and, you know, their shenanigans afoot.
Yeah, yeah. I won't spoil it for you, Sato. But
I watched live. I just don't even remember seeing this.
Oh,
I actually watched live this week.
Okay, so. Yeah, I did see you in the thread. So anyway, it was basically, you know how they talked early on about that there being these big holes.
Oh yeah, the holes.
Yeah. So apparently they're reaching. I guess at some point in the episode they discover they can't use Sir Warp. So then they go to one of the holes and they're trying to get through that. So.
Because there are barriers like between each hole that segregate the demon worlds, and so normally you get over that or through that with Sir Warp, but since he's not whatever is now available, they're trying another method, and this one is the one at least he showed in the preview isn't quite so successful.
Yeah, and it is kind of interesting to think about the fact that they are trying to get to the first demon world to get a Dragon Ball that they can't get, like they don't know it's already been taken, so.
Well, I mean, Goma's also in the first demon world, so like they'd have to stomp his ass anyway. So,
yeah, and I guess do they know that that's where Dende is?
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, or
at least they're assuming. Goma's with
Dende. Well, I guess they know that Goma took him. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, that's Daima. Just a fun episode. That's all. Let's move on to Dandadan. Dandadan episode 8. I've got this funny feeling is the episode title. This episode starts out pretty funny. Everyone's having dinner and they're slurping noodles. And Arya thinks everyone at the table except her is a demon. And there's a lot of funny, like, talking through your slurping action going on.
Yeah, there the whole scene between Momo and Ira with the kind of the, I don't know, the battle of words through slurping. That I had to imagine, if you're a voice actor, and this would be something fun to act.
Mm-hmm.
Like, unusual, kind of funny, kind of silly. It's not like a serious moment, but just like, all right, you are slurping noodles here. And you're trading jabs, verbal jabs, with the other characters here. And you know, and I also saw in the thread that if you watch this, you know, as it was airing, like on, you know, Crunchyroll or Amazon or whatever, the text would have been in Japanese characters. I'm assuming it was subtitled, but the text would be in Japanese characters. But the Blu-ray version that we get actually has all the text on the screen in English so that we can understand it without subtitles. But it was nice that we got that version. And it was just a really fun scene, right?
Yeah, I want to comment briefly about that because the way that the words came on the screen in English, it looked so good that I mm-hmm. thought that it was animated that way originally. The fact that they had redone that, or I don't know who did it. I don't know if that was the animation studio that did an alternate version or if it was something Crunchyroll did manually. Whoever did it, it looked like it was always supposed to be there by the animators.
Yeah, whoever was in charge of the Blu-ray release took that extra effort to do that for the English version. Well, so that's cool.
Like, there is obviously kind of coordination between Crunchyroll and the anime studios, because that's how streaming networks or whatever get the mm-hmm. are able to simulcast. They're getting this master straight from the animation studios and whatnot. So there's obviously like synergy and like communication with the two there. So I'm not sure if it matters if it's Crunchyroll or studio, but like they're obviously working on that together.
Well, what I mean is the quality of it didn't look cheap. I'm going to go with that the studio Science Saru did that because it looked too good. Like, I don't know. I've seen like when, you know what? I don't want to go down this road, but I'm just saying that like when a licensor like Crunchyroll tries to alter the animation after the fact for some reason because they have to fix something or something, the quality is never quite as good as what the original animation looks like. And this looked like it was done by it was too good.
It's like having access to the raw like Photoshop file with all the layers to work with versus having like the
If Crunchyroll did animate those words on the screen, they did an excellent job. But it also looked to me like it might have just been Science Saru had done an alternate take.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree it was the original animation studio. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm certainly inclined to agree it's likely them. Like, I'm just saying, like, the fact that they're like Japanese versions and English versions and all that stuff is like because these two entities are working together, though, of course, I would assume mm-hmm. Science Saru is one doing the animation.
And that's above and beyond. I mean, how many times have we seen where that doesn't happen? You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I just, they went a step above and beyond to translate. They could have very easily just put subtitles on the screen, but they didn't do that, which I think is pretty great. Mm-hmm. Anyway, right before Ira leaves, she says she vows to help free Okarun from all these demons. And he keeps telling her, he's like, I'm not a demon, but she doesn't believe him. Then we come to another really bizarre scene, very funny. They're going to put Okarun's ball back by playing some baseball. And it's full up Turbo Granny doing the pitching, Seiko with the bat, Okarun is the, I don't know, the he's the plate. And yeah, they
Momo's the umpire.
Yeah, the umpire, and yeah, he takes it right in the crotch and yeah.
Apparently it works.
It gets his ball back.
Good job. One down.
Yep. Then we cut to school. Very quickly, and Okarun and Momo are just kind of chatting, being like, hey, blah, 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 blah. Hey, I'll meet you up on the roof for lunch. And Okarun suddenly very reserved. He's like, well, I don't know. I can't. I got to do something. I got to like a study.
A report is what his.
I got a report. I got to do. He's being very squeamish in that moment. And Momo's just sort of like, in a cool way, she's sort of like, okay.
Yeah.
Like a friend would. But. The whole, she goes back to her like gal pals and they're all like, what's the deal? And why are you so down? And he's like, I don't know. I've got this funny feeling is what she mm-hmm. says. There's the episode title. And she thinks that maybe, he might have the hots for Ira. So she's getting a little jealous, goes looking for him, turns the corner and out back behind a building. He finds Okarun right over the top of Ira. Like they were about to kiss, which, as we learn, they actually kind of almost were. So anyway, commercial break. Come back. We kind of roll back about.
Yeah, now we see the other side.
Yeah. Go back at 30 minutes. Okarun had lied to her. He wasn't actually doing a report. He's trying to train to become stronger. He doesn't want to be weak. So he's putting on weights and doing push-ups and stuff like that. And then Ira comes, surprises him. And she says that she needs to kiss him because that's what love is about. And that she's been getting all this information from
her. It was like her dad's like magazines in her dad's study or something. And it's like,
yeah,
maybe not okay, the best source.
Like, okay, but did I miss something here? Like, why does Iris suddenly believe that he confessed to her? When did he confess to her? Is she just making that up, or?
I don't know if she like thinks like she there's kind of a meme where it's like, I can fix him if I date him.
I think it might have been. I remember that part in the when they're the family was eating, and then like Okurun, like Iroh was saying to Okurun, "Thank you for saving me," and Okurun just saying a matter of fact, like, "I was doing what anyone would do," like not in like necessarily cool badass way, but just meaning himself matter of factly. Mm-hmm. And then I think that just really struck her. And then because in her obviously her warped mind of like she admits she doesn't have really much romantic experience, and she's reading basically like she seemed like porn magazines to kind of learn up on it.
Yeah.
So I think just her emotions, her hormones, her lack of experience, and her genuine appreciation for what Okurun did, I think he just she maybe interpreted his kind words as like something of a confession, or maybe just like admiration or some kind of spark there. And then she's just like kind of clueless, so she's trying to explore that in the most comedic way possible.
Yeah, so she's kind of believes that he likes her, and so she's going to consummate that with a kiss. And so she kind of.
She even says to him, like, stop being so weird. And Okurun's like, me, I'm not being weird. You're being weird.
Yeah. And she explains, like, we get some really fun little shots of, like, what Crocodile just says, where it's like, you see her, like, studying her dad's,
like some magazine.
Risque, yeah, porn magazines and risque love materials. And he's like, yeah, that, you shouldn't be reading that. That's not useful information. Anyway, this ultimately leads to her kind of them tussling briefly because they're trying to kiss. I like the shot right before they fall, though, where it's like really goofy animation where they're like pushing against each other, almost fighting. And it's just like, I love this. When the animation goes there in this show and it just sort of looks almost like Looney Tunes, I love that. I think it looks great. Anyway, mm-hmm. falls over. And then that's when, of course, Momo spotted them. And I mean, we do see in this like new version of it, though, that you can see she was actually like Iroh was like puckering her lips and being like, come on, kiss me.
It also showed that Iroh was the one that like purposely like pulled his leg. Like she used her leg to trip his leg. Like basically she forced him to fall on her.
Oh, I didn't catch that. Okay.
Yeah, it was part in one of the cuts of the animation. It's hard to explain and verbally, but like she kind of like took her leg and cut the backside of his leg with hers to like trip him over and basically force him to fall on top of her. So like gotcha. she basically like, I can get a kiss this way kind of thing or whatever. This is how we will embrace.
Well, she doesn't get her kiss, and that's when Momo sees him. And of course, you know, obviously she takes it the wrong way. Doesn't give Okurun a chance to explain the situation. He comes running after her into the hallway. And
yeah, she's like, well, you lied to me. And he's like, well, yes, but also.
Yeah, I don't even think he gets a chance to explain.
Right. He basically, she just says, you lied. And he kind of is like, well, yes. And then she just like, nope, that's all I have to hear. Even though she doesn't let him say the whole story.
So yeah, they split up. Momo goes back to her classroom. They're having some kind of lecture about the certain kind of shrimp, the shrimps that can like hit like with super hard force, which I think is a real thing.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's similar to like ants being able to lift 50 times their body weight, but like obviously the scaling doesn't work if you try to blow them up, but like on their scale it works. So
yeah,
a mantis shrimp is something similar.
So she's like dipping like a ruler into this aquarium, and there's like a little shrimp in there punching at it and stuff, and then suddenly everything changes. All of the other students have kind of disappeared, and there's like about 3 or 4 inches of water everywhere. And all of they go out and they rush outside and they see there's no sun. The windows are all dark, and Okurun and Iroh are there. And then we see this, I don't know, describe this thing. Well, it's like, first there's like a snake or like kind of looks like a dinosaur.
People said it was like a mix between like Godzilla and Loch Ness Monster.
Yeah,
only small. It's supposed to be. Relatively, I mean, you could small. Say like, I like to say it's like a Lapras shooting a hyper beam, but yes. I'm pretty sure like the actual XB is a Loch Ness Monster XB.
Yeah, it literally fires a big laser that like cuts half the school. It's freaking out. And Momo is seeing this. I should be specific. Momo is seeing this aspect of the of this laser firing dinosaur thing. Meanwhile, we cut over to Okarun and Ira, and they see this other thing. Describe this other thing.
It's like a boxing bug.
Is it a crab?
It's a shrimp.
It's a shrimp? Okay, I had written down crab, but it makes more sense now. That it must be shrimp because there was a whole scene with the shrimp punching.
I will put shrimp in quotation marks here. Obviously, they'll elaborate later, but yeah.
Yeah, it looks like an anthropomorphized shrimp that looks like a boxer, and it's saying something. Keeps quoting. I didn't write down what it said, but...
Someone mentioned ABBA. Like, is it singing some ABBA song? I don't know.
Is that right? I'm about to look this up.
I'm anyway, not familiar. So.
It was saying something, and it was, I don't know. It seemed like it had some kind of like joke to it, but I didn't quite understand it. But yeah, the boxing shrimp attacks and starts, you know, hitting them and stuff. And then suddenly, boom, it's the Serponians. They've returned and they are back for Okarun's banana. So there's like four of them. And yeah, they kind of have a little bit of a scuffle here. And there's like a little bit like, why are you after us? And they say something like, it's like, well, you don't realize just how powerful yours is. Yours is exceptional, is what they say. And then they see Ira nearby, and then they comment, they're like, you shouldn't be able to see us, human. There's something special about you too.
Yeah, they say something like the void that they create, only people with a certain level of like spiritual aptitude can, you know,
right,
it's be aware of it.
They set up a domain kind of like they did back in episode 2. And yeah. Actually, Okarun, who like noticed it before the aliens even show up, he's like, I've seen this before. And he harkens back to the second episode. So like they obviously set up the domains to trap specifically Okarun and Momo, because obviously they fought them before and they know they're kind of like abnormal humans, you know, spiritually aware and so on and so forth. Of course, Ira being here is like, hey, why is she here? What does that mean? I wonder, yeah.
Yeah, interesting. And then they break out their like dong shaped devices, like they're about to attack, when suddenly they get knocked back and it's revealed that Ira has now transformed and that she's going to save Okarun. She now has the power of the acrobatic Silky within her, and she's transformed just like Okarun does. Dun, dun, dun. That's the episode. I will say I'm not the least bit surprised that Ira could do this. I kind of expected this to happen.
Yeah. Like, I didn't know exactly what she'd be capable of, but I expected she would be like, had developed some sort of ability. So.
Yeah, I didn't expect though, and I should have, that when she's in her alternate forms, just like Okarun, she almost has like a different personality as well.
Yeah.
Because it's like a merging, I guess, of the host and the power or whatever. Yeah. Yeah. She was doing her like pirouettes and other little like acrobatic-y moves while they attacked and stuff. Thoughts on this episode?
Yeah, this is a sort of surprise. Dandadan had another great episode, shock and awe. You know, I thought like I know the whole like, oh, I caught my girlfriend looking like they're, you know, cheating on me. Let's insert some forced drama. I do think the show kind of, maybe it's just the natural way it writes things, did a better job of it than I would think most shows. Like, most shows can be really obnoxious about these sorts of plot points. And I just didn't really feel that much here. I will say, thankfully, like, this is not a plot point that like remains for too much longer. But like, even as we're, you know, working through it, it felt a lot more reasonable and manageable and kind of sensical than a lot of other instances of you seeing this trope explored in other media. So at least I appreciate for that sense. Obviously, there's like a lot of the changing the dynamics of the kind of group, with, you know, Ira just obviously being a bigger part of the group, but also, you know, a power user herself. Obviously, the bringing back old plot lines, aliens certainly haven't disappeared. They're going to obviously be reoccurring foes. Yeah, I just thought it was a great episode. And I think like Okarun trying to do his best, being a great guy who's also trying to self-improve himself. So he's not like the sulker or whiner. He's like, I want to help people. I want to be a better person. You know, I think everyone's just kind of putting a good face and strong characterization throughout, and as well as, you know, good action and good humor.
Yeah, I would say that part of the reason that the whole, like, I found you cheating trope works pretty well here is because he did lie. Like, if he, that adds a level of believability on Momo's part, because it's not just that she's huffed to see him with another girl. It's the fact that he betrayed her trust by lying to her. So, yeah. Seda?
Also, like, as soon as we got to, like, the second half of the episode and basically Momo and everyone finds themselves in this void, you know, this greenish glowing void, like, the very first thing she says is, like, where's Okarun? Like, she kind of realizes at this point, like, okay, something's happening. I got to find the only other person who would possibly know anything else about this or could help or be here. So, like, even after the incident, she's still, like, at this moment realizing I need to find him to, like, figure out what's going on.
Yeah.
So it's not a complete, like, severing of whatever relationship they have.
Oh yeah, Momo's mad at Okarun, but she's not like, and now we can never be friends. Like, she's right. Not, she's reacting. She's not overreacting.
Mm. Yeah, my overall thoughts are that, again, yeah, it's great. This is my favorite show on the block. It's really good. Keeping the pace going by having the plot constantly moving forward. Twists here and there, not major ones in this episode, but still. I like to see how fast, I like that they've very quickly had Ira become a main character. So I'm into that. I'm into seeing what she's going to be able to do next episode. And I'm glad that the Serponians are back because they're such a cool design. I like seeing them on the screen and they're weird.
Yeah, they're
genitals.
They're kind of strange yet compelling. But very strange.
Yeah, they're very iconic. I saw a piece of artwork just the other day that somebody had drawn. It was one of those art pieces that has, like, where somebody draws, like, an image that's like a big setting of a bunch of people, and it's like all these different characters from different media all together. You know, it was like a big mm-hmm. shop scene, and it was like, oh, here's all these aliens. I think the theme was like outer space, and it was like, I had, like, you know, all the popular aliens from all these different properties, Star Wars, Star Trek, everything. And and then the one I saw in there were these guys from Dawn to Dawn. They're like the most iconically looking alien from this show. Yeah, good stuff. Great animation too. I mean, it kind of goes without saying at this point, but looked really good. I'm going to update my notes here to say that was a boxing shrimp. Okay. I don't know what that's about. It's like the Serponians have some ability to, like, summon these things, these, like, warriors. And I don't quite understand what they're doing.
I mean, they had a crab earlier. No, the crab was, what was the crab? The crab was.
Yeah, I think that was one. Well, no, that was a different thing.
It was related to Turbo Granny. You're talking
about Turbo Granny's, that wasn't, like, an alien.
Okay. They had the big sumo looking thing. Remember from that, like, the alien. Second episode or whatever. Yeah.
Like, the shrimp's deal will be explained in the next episode or two. Like, so you'll learn about what the shrimp's deal is.
Yeah, I figured it's coming. I just am saying, like, right at this point, I'm still confused. I'm sure it's coming, but, like, it is interesting. It's like they kind of have, like, I don't know. I mean, because it's weird. They walk this line between aliens and supernatural, and I think that's what the show's about. But yeah. And also, I did think there was a very brief moment in this episode, too, where Ira was like, because Ira thinks everything is, like, they're all demons. And he's like, no, this has to do with the paranormal. And then we got attacked by aliens. And she's like, what? There's aliens. You know, and it's like, every new character comes along, they have to be explained. That's like, yeah, aliens too. That's another thing. Well, let's move on to Bleach. Bleach, The Thousand-Year Blood War, Season 2, Episode 3, The Fundamental Virulence. I can't say it for some reason.
Yeah, virulence. Yep.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Okay. Fundamental virulence.
All right, quick rundown. Stern Ritter the Iron. He walks up and he drops unconscious Rengoku down on the ground. and then uses a Bankai against Toshiro. He's using Toshiro's Bankai that he had stolen to attack him. Then Kisuke is communicating with the scientist guy whose name I did write down. His name is Kurosuchi. That's the face guy.
You can see Mayuri as well. Like that's his first, Mayuri's his first name.
Okay.
Whatever you want.
I have to write down these names. I can't remember them. But anyway, he's like talking to him, and like the scientist guy, Kurosuchi, is like, he's like, you figured this out? And then Kisuke is very like, oh yeah, it's easy. I figured it out. It's a piece of cake, you know. And he's kind of showing him up, basically. He's showing off. And even the guy's like, he's like, well, how you can't even get here? And then he just like opens a portal. He's like, here I am. And it's like, it's just kind of like making the scientist guy look kind of like a fool a little bit, which is fun because that guy has obviously got a super huge ego.
And I like how this whole scene is taking place while Mayuri has like this rainbow glowing coat on the whole time.
Yeah, him and his lieutenant both are like glowing bright. I did notice her outfit this time because I missed it the last episode. But yeah, mm-hmm. You could see she had like a little outfit on too. Then we get, and I just wrote down, lots of Bankai mumbo jumbo. Is this worth trying to explain?
It was like something about they can steal Bankai, but they're at odds with Hollows. They cannot take Hollification. So like, here's a pill that somehow adds like a little bit of Hollification to your Bankai so that they can no longer steal it.
Yes.
And then like, we even see this because when Toshiro Hitsugaya gets his Bankai back, he has like that sort of like ice skull that's sort of on his face now. And he's like, this is different. Well, they said it was something about, like he said it was like a holified, well, whatever. He even kind of says that. So like, I think both of us, me and you, joked in the thread, like, this makes a lot of sense when it makes no sense at all.
Yeah.
My genuine understanding of it is like, Quincy's are like cannot absorb or powers or anything of like Hollows. They're like, right. They're like at odds with Hollows. It's like they just don't sync for whatever reason. There's the laws of the universe. So like, if you add a little bit of Hollow to and this is probably why
yes, like, that's where Ichigo's
Bankai couldn't get stolen, you know, exactly. In like the earlier episodes, because he's part Hollow and part everything. So like, this pill that somehow Kisuke got to like exactly where it needed to go to everyone. Just touch it and it like turns your Bankai into a little bit of a holified version of it. And now basically can no longer be stolen.
Well, it's a bit of an ass pull to a certain extent because it not only takes away the Bankai from the Sternritters.
Yeah, even if they're already stolen.
Stolen, they get it back. And then there's like a little bit they talk about a little bit. They're like, what, do you think the Bankais are alive? And it's like, well, yeah, I guess they kind of are because they talk to them, you know, and stuff like that. It's like the Sternritters don't get that. Anyway, so maybe there's a little bit of that involved, that kind of sentience to their Bankai that's making this possible. But yeah, they touch it, it absorbs it. They get their Bankai back, and now it's powerful, and they can't be stolen again because it's got a little bit of Hollow in it. And like you said, I was going to say, you beat me to it. This explains why Ichigo's Bankai cannot be stolen. He is part Hollow. He's part everything. So, yes, he's everyone now who's gotten these pills, which I do agree. How did he get them to them? They just magically appeared. But, all right, looks like Crocodile's got to leave in a hurry. So thank you very much for being here, Crocodile. Take care. Okay, anyway, where I was. They all just get these pills, like, magically. I don't know why, I understand how.
Yeah, it's like, for somehow these pills end up exactly where they need to be. Like, for example, like, Hitsugaya, or Toshiro, is, like, on the ground, basically bleeding out, just in the battlefield, and then all of a sudden there's, like, one of these pills literally right next to him, where he can just, like, just move his, you know, half-dead arm very, very slightly and just touch it with his finger. And it's just like, how did that get there? Like,
yeah,
magic,
somehow, some kind of magic. We didn't see it. But anyway, yeah. So all of our captains who've had their Bankai stolen, or maybe some that even didn't, but are getting their stuff back, including that one girl.
Soifone.
Thank you. And this leads to the thing we talked about last week.
Her Bankai is a missile.
Yes. Yeah. So we get the missile attack, which was great. So yeah, the robot that she was fighting is freaking out. He's like, what? How did you? What? What? Who? Huh? Gets destroyed. And then likewise, Toshiro defeats the other guy that had taken his power. He wins.
Yeah. So both of those Stern Riders are out. One of them was I. One of the, like, I know them. I know some of them by their letters, but whatever.
Yeah, I was the one that, yeah, I don't know the other one now.
But mainly the flame guy, who was the one who actually started the fight. He was just kind of, he was like the I guy, the Stern Rider letter I, he kind of came in and like, let me take care of this. And now he's basically dead, or he was dead before the ending of the episode.
Right.
And then the fire guy, he was just like, well, later. And he just, you know, went his own way.
Yeah. I think he's F, I think.
Oh, and then, yeah, I'm looking at your notes here. And then after that, or maybe while this is happening, I guess this was all before the break. Sorry, just trying to remember what happened in what order. Because we had other scenes with, like, Shinji, who is a smiling guy, and then doggy guy. So
I got that. I think that's right after the break. So,
yeah.
Anyway, come back from commercial break. Smiling guy. That's what I call him.
I think his name is Shinji, I think.
Shinji, okay. Yeah, he uses his Bankai. He's got his Bankai. And he's back, and he starts using his. I've never seen it before, so this is new to me. He has some kind of like hallucination ability, and he makes all the enemies think that they're like. It's maybe it's more than a hallucination. I'm not quite sure, but he can make the enemies think that they're attacking their opponents when they're really attacking each other.
And someone in the thread said that this was an addition from the anime. It wasn't in the manga because apparently this ability was detailed in like some like light novel later, like Shinji. Oh. I guess his Bankai was never revealed until like way later or in some other material. And then the anime basically decided, you know what, really? Let's just kind of add this scene here with Shinji showing his Bankai.
Wow. That's shocking.
Which is probably why all the people that he did it against were just kind of like mooks. couldn't be anyone important because it didn't actually happen.
I guess if you were a Bleach fan and hadn't read ahead, this would have been pretty shocking to see, like, a big deal. Like, holy crap. We see him use his Bankai. Yeah, it was really neat. I mean, he had him doing all kinds of crazy stuff. And then I wrote down 3-1 against a wrestler.
Yeah, the wrestler guy came and he was... So there's like these... There's Ikkaku is the only one whose name I remember. He's the bald guy. And then he has like his roommate friend, who's with him all the time, whose name I don't remember. And then the other guy with a 69 on his face, whose name I also don't remember. Like those three guys. Yeah. You know how we had that joke, like those guys from Naruto?
Yeah.
I feel like these are those guys from Bleach. Just like, oh yeah, those guys.
I call 69 69 because that's the way to remember him.
It's like Shunsui or Shunsuke or Shinsuke or I don't know.
Shunsui sounds kind of familiar, maybe.
No, that's the flower captain guy, whatever.
Okay, I don't know.
Yeah, yes, I really apologize. The names are
whatever.
Hard.
I mean, anyway, they fight against the wrestler guy and they do a pretty good job. Mm-hmm. They're taking them down. Like all the Stern, it's like there's been a lot of back and forth these last two episodes. Good guys winning, good guys losing, good guys winning, good guys looting, good guys winning, you know. Mm-hmm. So we're finally back to good guys winning again. Anyway, meanwhile, the female Stern Rider, the one with the boob attack we talked about last week. I know it's not a boob attack. I just like saying that. She's walking around wanting to fight that doggy. She keeps calling it doggy, that guy. And then smiling guy shows up to her and, you know, and starts attacking her using his Bankai, making everything backwards to her. So up is down, left is right. You know, she can't hit him because she can't do anything. Everything's backwards for her. And so, yeah, the Stern Riders are having a real hard time. They're all getting kind of beat. Oh, we should have mentioned, too, right before I talk about the last thing that happens is the flame guy. After Stern Rider I was defeated, he just walks away.
Yeah, I said that earlier. He just kind of later. I briefly mentioned it. Yeah, he just kind of leaves.
He just leaves. Yeah. Anyway, things look really bleak. We cut back to see, you know, Yuhabaha sitting in his throne and what's his face standing next to him, Uryu. And mm-hmm. But instead of being concerned, he just laughs. He's just like, and then he says something. He's like, oh, blah, blah, blah. And then, like, suddenly all the Sternritters start being powered up. These big, like, shards of light shooting off the top of them. And Yuha Vaha is just laughing. He's like, ah, you guys were not prepared for this. And that's kind of where the episode ends. So apparently all the people who were just defeated are now powered up again. And then someone in the thread was like, that's Bleach. Because I said, this seems like an ass pull in the thread. And they're like, yeah, this is normal. So, yeah. Battle episode, pretty much. No exposition here. Well, no, there was that exposition scene, I guess, explaining the hollow pills. But anyway, mostly fights. It looked fine. It was okay. Actually, I thought this was a little... This show looks good, but this was like, compared to some of the other stuff we've seen recently, this was like a moderate episode. It wasn't like a great episode. It was just sort of moderate.
Yeah, it was... Not bad. Not great.
No, not bad. Not bad, but not like great either. Mm-hmm. I guess it was kind of fun. Like I said, it's fun seeing the smiling guy do his stuff because that was really interesting. Anyway, I wonder if like the whole like stealing Bankai thing is just a non-thing now going forward, you know?
Well, it seemed like it was very weird. It seemed like we stole the Bankai and then like you stole the Bankai back. And it almost feels like, but that was my plan the entire time, was for you to steal your Bankai's back. Like, okay.
Yeah, I guess. Did he say that? I don't even remember that.
I'm trying to, like, the explanation for what happened at the end, it seemed like because their Bankai's because they gained the Bankai and because the Bankai's were, like, then removed, that allowed them to do this power-up or something.
Okay.
And someone in the thread even said, like, huh, you fool, your disadvantage is actually an advantage, you know, that sort of thing. Like,
okay,
it was my plan the whole time, and I'll have to see if they extrapolate on this in the next episode.
Yeah, so. Could be. I would be surprised if that's what it is. Plans within plans.
Very Bleach.
Any other thoughts on this episode before we move on?
I don't think so.
Okay. It was all right. Let's move on to Blue Exorcist. Blue Exorcist episode 4, Insider. So I was way off. There's a big twist in this episode, I will admit, I did not see coming, but we'll get to that. So, before we get to what was happening at the end of the last episode, we see a scene where Lightning is interrogating an Illuminati guy that he's captured, who's a spy. And he's like, I'm going to get some information out of you, even if I have to threaten your family. And then, like, brings in this guy's, like, wife and son to watch. As he like interrogates this guy, and it's like, damn, dude, this is kind of serious. I don't know. It felt a little over the top to me. I think that's the point, but I was like,
yeah, are the Exorcists the baddies?
Yeah. Are we the baddies? Yeah. It felt like that. I mean, I think that's what they're going for too. Cause I don't even know if Angel was in on that. He kind of felt like he may not have been, but yeah. Lightning's just like, fuck your shit. You're a bad guy. I'm going to do whatever I have to do. It's like this defenseless woman, and it's like her child is like, oh god damn, dude. Anyway, Shura meets up with the students in the hallway, and she's like, okay, everyone, we got to look for Izumo. And they're all rushing off to try to find her because they know she knows that she's in danger. And so Izumo and the puppet kid, whose name is Takara. They are together like they were in the end of the last scene, last episode. And he explains that he is a coordinator. He's been sent here to be a coordinator.
And even Izumo even mentioned something like, well, what are you coordinating?
Yeah. And they have a little bit of a fight. She tries to summon her like fox demons. They come out. But then he like has this little toy robot. And that he throws, and it becomes a giant toy robot mecha. It has like the rocket fist ability and everything.
Yeah, it's very, it's kind of cartoony. Like it's got like the boxing gloves, like
yeah,
type like very like it's a child's toy. And like, yes. Is that this guy's thing? He's got like a puppet and like a child's toy. And okay.
Yeah. I think it's like he's all about toys and uses toys as powers or something. Yeah. So they fight. And this is that's just a big fight. Renzo Shima rescues Izumo at the last minute. He comes in. This is the pink haired guy who's been a student and everything. He comes in and he's there to try to fight against Takura.
And he summons this like shadow beast thing whose name I forget, but like I remember people in the theater like, wait, you could do this the whole time.
Right. And I think even Izumo's surprised. She's like, what? You could do it. And like during the whole battle, he's kind of like grabbing Izumo and like
he actually picks her up and like runs off, and like he has to be at least pretty strong to like just pick up a girl and just run holding her with one arm basically.
Yeah, and he's doing this thing that he's like, oh, you're my girlfriend, you know, like, oh, we're lovers, you know, we're gonna be lovers for her, and she's like, what are you talking about? I'm not into you, and you know, being her thing, but he's all this like being like trying to be really suave, and you know, because he's always been that way, where he's always like kind of trying.
He's always been like kind of the how do I phrase it? He's just kind of like the lovable loser, but he's like, I don't know, he's always seeking out. And he's
like
a romance.
He's like a womanizer. He's like, he just thinks that he's like, you know, like the hot stuff. Always going after the girls. Skirt chaser.
Like the hopeless romantic.
Yeah. And he particularly sees Izumo as being like someone who's surely she'll be into him.
I think even in like the first episode of the season, there's even just like something. It was either this season or last season where they're just out on like the school grounds having like lunch. And he was like, hey, want to go out with me? You know, he's always been after her in a way. Because he probably knew that she was going to be his target eventually.
Yeah. So that kind of leads into the big twist. She's kind of like
playing it up. So
the big twist is right before the commercial break, it's revealed that no. But well, first of all, I was really happy to learn that Izumo was not the spy. But it's not Takura either. It's Renzo. Renzo is the spy who works for the Illuminati. This guy. I didn't see that coming. He doesn't seem like he's like the Ryuji character. You know what I mean? Like he's just too goofy. I'm just surprised.
Well, like in a way, like Takura is a spy, but he's like a spy for Mephisto. Right. In a way.
Yeah. And so we'll learn more about that in a minute. Yeah.
So like we have like dueling spies,
but he's not an Illuminati member.
No.
And Renzo is. So his whole time, Renzo has been an Illuminati. And at first when they come back from the break, I kind of was expecting this to be like a trick they were going to play on us. And we're like, well, it's not really like that, but no, he really is. So Renzo's boss shows up. It's like this woman, she's like in like a, this garb that they wear. It looks kind of like a military kind of thing.
Someone actually mentioned it reminds him of like Valkyria Chronicles. If you've ever played that, just like, kind of like retro future World War type, like army getup. Yeah.
And so she's there and she's like kind of giving Renzo commands and being like, we need to go. And you're kind of overdoing it, or, you know, just kind of give him a hard time, kind of further cementing the fact that, yeah, he's straight up an Illuminati spy. And then in the sky, they see these bright lights that start to form these shapes. And it turns out these things are called the Seraphim, which, if you know anything about that, that's like they're like these highest level of angels.
Yeah, they're angels.
Yeah, and they're appearing all over the place in the sky, and this means, somebody's coming, and none other, not in an angelic way, he just arrives in a helicopter, but a guy walks out with a mask on, and it's none other than Lucifer. It's Lucifer himself, the most powerful demon.
And apparently, and he calls Mephisto brother, although I don't know if that's like...
Right, we've talked
like,
about
are
that.
You actually a brother, or are you just, you know, all demons of a certain rank just refer to each other as familial or whatever?
Yeah.
And we see Lucifer in the opening, I think. He's the pale blonde guy.
Yeah.
So yeah. I'm assuming with the devilish eyes. So...
Yeah.
I was wondering who that was in the opening. Like, who is this guy? I'm assuming he'll show up. And while we didn't see his face because he's wearing a mask, like, oh, it's got to be him. So.
Yeah. Yeah, and even Mephisto says, like, you know, like, I'm the second most powerful demon in the world, and this is the first. It's Lucifer. And Lucifer's there to basically declare war. He's just there. It's like, I'm formally... And they have this kind of very cordial conversation, him and Mephisto.
Well, I think Mephisto knows that he's kind of... I know some people in the thread, I think, saw, like, why doesn't Mephisto do something? It's like, well, I think his hands are kind of tied there. Like, he couldn't do anything without endangering something else. So he wasn't in the place to do anything there.
I also feel like Mephisto is always looking after himself and
right.
trying to has his own plans.
He's not going to take risks.
No. And anyway, I think he knows that Lucifer's just here to declare the war. He's just declaring the war is going to begin.
We don't know exactly why they need Izumo. They say they need her, but we don't quite know why.
No, we don't.
I'm assuming it has something to do with summoning, because that's her thing.
But. Yeah, so yeah, he basically lays out their plan. I mean, he just, in no small words, just says, the plan is, this is what the Illuminati's plan is, the plan is that they're going to resurrect Satan and then fuse the two worlds into one. That's the goal. So Satan is coming back. That's the plan.
I think a few of us in the thread, me included, said, oh, this is like an SMT game. SMT Shin Megami Tensei. Obviously, those games are devils versus angels or whatever. So that's Blue Exorcist kind of falls into that. But his plan sounds very kind of a little bit tropey, where it's like, we will fuse the world. Everyone will be like subservient to, you know, Satan, and there will be no conflict. And it's kind of like, in a twisted way, it's like a utopia, because it's like there's no conflict, there's no fighting, but it's like, yeah, but everyone's like an automaton now. You know, there's no free will. And then even Mephisto said something about like chaos, and it's like, that's exactly what SMT is like overly ordered law versus, you know, chaotic, you know, natured whatever. So it's kind of like a law versus chaos thing here, which is very SMT. So
I could be wrong about this, but I thought about this from when they were talking about that, because, you know, he did say it's like, it's going to be a utopia, because it'll be, there won't be any wars anymore. Everyone will be whatever. And I was thinking, like, what would Mephisto think? And I think it's been made pretty clear that Mephisto is a big fan of humanity and its like luxuries. And like, he's a big fan of like, he likes to collect things that humans make, and he likes watching anime, and like, he's like into stuff like that. You know what I mean? And I don't think he's for this.
No, he's not. He's the chaos cipher. And someone even mentioned in the thread, like, well, if Lucifer is law and Mephisto is chaos, and humanity is usually portrayed on the side of chaos, and like, then who is neutral? Because in SMT games, there's oftentimes a neutral. And someone in the thread even said, like, stay tuned.
Oh, really?
Obviously, I know this isn't SMT, but there might be like a third party or something.
Okay. Well, but I'm just saying that, like, Lucifer. I'm sorry, Mephisto, which his name's not Mephisto. I'm just going to keep
calling him Samael.
Yeah. Mephisto, he doesn't want to lose what humanity has, you know, because he likes it. So I think he might be on the side of humanity in that respect.
And then even Lucifer mentioned something offhand. I think it was Lucifer, like, I forget the exact wording, but he basically alludes to Rin, like, I see your project or your toy or your something here. And basically alluding that he's like aware that Rin is a part of Mephisto's like plan, tool, arsenal, like something about it. Like, you know, Mephisto wants to use Rin for something, probably against Lucifer and Satan. You know, how exactly? Who knows? And is it purely good intentions? Who knows? You know, we never know with Mephisto, but Lucifer did bring that up.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, but before he leaves, though, we see Lucifer is kind of like starting to have like this little bit of blood kind of drip down his face, and he starts coughing. And as he's walking back, he actually has to be held and kind of falls to the ground briefly. He's apparently very ill or sick. There's something about him that's very like he's not well. So I think that's important to note, because he wears like a mask, but I think that mask was to hide like all the bleeding that was happening. Rin is, everyone's like, you know, and again, Mephisto's just kind of standing there, his hands kind of behind his back, just being, you know, like, okay, well, I'll see you soon, I'm sure, you know, kind of very nonchalant about everything that's going on. But Rin, of course, he can't, he's like, I'm going to kill you taking Izumo. And he's really mad at Shima. Shima, how could you betray us? And I want to say that it's really interesting how Shima is like, his personality doesn't change. He's still himself.
So like, I feel like this is also a little bit of a trope where like a character who has something to hide, sometimes they act up like they play up like the jokiness and the playfulness, where they kind of like, that's kind of like the face they put on, where they're like jokey, playful, goofy, you know, flirty in his case, but it's like he's actually hiding the fact that he has this secret mission. But also when he's like interacting with the other Illuminati people, it seems pretty clear that he's not like a high ranking official or anything. He's just kind of like a scrub. And he even like has his boss, who's some woman. And he's just kind of like, oh, am I going with you? And like, oh, what do you want me to do? Like, he's basically just their lackey. And it's even a little bit silly where he like gets onto the helicopter and he collapses right away. And this is due to his summoning earlier. And then his boss is his Illuminati boss is like, someone put him in a chair. Like, he's not like a high ranking. Well,
he's not respected
Illuminati guy. He's just some Illuminati grunt. Now, I'm assuming we'll learn exactly like how he ended up in this position. Like, why is he working for them? Was it just something that he's always been a part of, or was he just grew up there? Who knows? But he's not like he's not like some secret officer. He's just a grunt.
And he was involved a bit in the last arc with the whole like family, the thing he had going on, right? Like, he had that brother and everything.
Yeah, like he has like his three brothers are all part of that shrine. So
yeah. Anyway, so yeah, something happened here. I honestly, the fact that he hasn't completely turned coat and gone like, I'm evil, because he hasn't done that, I'm going to assume at this point, at some point, he will.
Yeah, I think he's still redeemable. He hasn't done anything. He's obviously
kidnapped
on the antagonistic side right now, but he hasn't done anything that it would be like irredeemable.
Right.
Like in writing, I don't think it would be. He's not like he killed anyone or did anything, you know, that you couldn't take back somehow or redeem himself. So,
yeah, I agree. I think, and again, the fact that like you said, they're playing him down as kind of like a low level grunt kind of makes it even more plausible that he could be swayed and turned to see what was good.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, he kind of just gives a farewell. He's like, take care. I'll see you around. And then as they leave, all the seraphim in the sky explode, destroying parts of the big True Cross Academy. And to make things even worse, everyone looks up and they just see thousands of little mid-level demons flying in the air. So the war has started. I will say that, this is really, more than any other arc, has really started to push the plot forward.
Yeah.
This is like big things that are happening. Yeah. Okay. I'm just happy that Izumo wasn't bad.
But now we have to save her.
Oh, that kind of sucks. That's true. Maybe she'll do something cool. But she's kind of turned into a damsel at this point. And then I guess we're going to learn more about this Takura kid. Oh, by the way, I didn't mention Mephisto pointed out that, yeah, like you said, Mephisto, he's there because of Mephisto, and he's like a level one exorcist or something, like a top level exorcist.
Yeah.
He's like super powerful. He's like apparently even more like powerful than like Yukio.
Yeah.
So
I forget the ranks, but they keep calling like Yukio like rank one intermediate, but this guy's like rank one high level or whatever it was.
Yeah. So he's just like super powerful or something.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Anything else?
This was episode 4. I think when you look at Wikipedia, they call this season 3 and then the next one season 4, but also they kind of describe it as like a split core. So I think it's more like there's two sets of 12. But anyways, we're still pretty early on in this Illuminati arc. So it feels like things have gotten pretty serious, but there's a lot that can happen from here. So there's a lot of room left.
All right, well, let's finish up with One Piece. One Piece, episode 744, No Way Out, Admiral Fujitora's Ruthless Pursuit. Not a lot happens in this episode, so I'll go through this really quick. Harujin just grabs Luffy in his giant hand and starts running with him. Luffy does not like this, but nonetheless, it's the only way to get them to leave. And all the pirates run with them. Turns out that Orlumbus, the Surmounter, is the captain of a huge fleet of ships, and he's got them all lined up leading out of Dressrosa. And they all like drop these bridges down that they can run on.
And they spend most of the episode running on the bridges.
Yeah, it's pretty much the whole episode, right? Meanwhile, Fujitora starts moving that giant ball of debris over the top of them with the intent of dropping it on all the ships and all the pirates to kill them. But then the townspeople that we so hate start running up and are yelling to get Luffy.
Yeah, they're yelling that they want to get Luffy because he kidnapped Rebecca. Like, give us Rebecca back or whatever. That's what they're yelling outwardly. Right. But then they kind of have this kind of goofy but kind of charming scene where like a child is like, Rebecca's over there. They saw her. And then there's like a parent explaining to the kid that everyone hears and Fujitora hears, like, actually, we know that that Rebecca is safe and that her father is Kuros and blah, blah, blah. And like the pirates actually helped save her and help save the kingdom. And we're going to basically, long story short, if they get into the way, then Fujitora is not going to drop the rubble.
Yeah.
He's not going to, like, they're basically, if they get into the target area, Fujitora is not going to like kill them. So he's going to have no choice but to relent.
Exactly. So I'm not entirely sure when this happened. It could have happened last episode when they were chasing Luffy then. I don't know.
Some of it might be the adaptation makes the townspeople maybe stupider than maybe how they appeared in the manga, just because when you have so much time to fill, it's maybe easier to have townspeople just doing stuff that's not necessarily or whatever. So
I guess what I'm going to say is I'm going to be fair and say that if when they started getting mad at Luffy an episode or two ago, if this was the plan all along, then they aren't as dumb as I thought. It's like they kind of did. They fooled me. If the plan was to fool Fujitora, they also fooled me, the audience. So I'll throw them a bone there. They're not as dumb as I thought. This was part of a plan to prevent Fujitora from hitting them. Now, maybe they just came up with that. I don't know. But anyway. So yeah, like you said, they start running out onto the planks of wood. And that, of course, Fujitora is not going to kill innocents.
Yeah. If your choice becomes, I can stop Straw Hat, but I'll have to murder hundreds, if not thousands of people while I do it, he's not going to do it.
Yeah.
So,
and then he just sort of is like, there's like a brief moment where Fujitora is just like, all right, Straw Hat, you did okay. Yeah.
Or actually, I had to remind myself, it's actually a pretty nice scene where he's like, I wonder what your smile looks like. What color is your hair?
Oh yeah, that was nice.
And like, what do your eyes look like? And he actually even mentions that, it heavily implies that he blinded himself due to something that he saw that was so, you know, distressing or whatever, that he never wanted to see anything like that again. So it heavily implies that he blinded himself.
Yeah.
So what was that? I don't know.
Yeah. But I'll be honest. I don't know either. I don't remember.
I think someone in the thread said this has not actually been expounded upon yet. So,
okay. That might be true.
Even up to date.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever, if it had, I don't remember it. And I will say that like, my impression was that like he saw the Marines do something, and like, in order for him to, this is my impression. I don't know if it's the case, but I felt like it was something like that, where it's like he blinded himself in order to continue to do his job because he didn't want to see something that he had saw the Marines do or something. I could be wrong.
Yeah, I get it, where he maybe wants to, like, he believes in some good of the Marines, but he knows that the Marines there's lots of, and he just decides, I cannot witness this myself. And that's his way to, I guess, distance himself in a way. So
yeah, and then you're like I really wonder what his smile looks like. It was like a really nice scene. I agree, shouldn't gloss over that. And then all of the pirates make it to the main ship, the Yanta Maria. Again, this is another Columbus parody thing, but anyway, it's a giant ship, super super giant ship, and everyone gets on board, and all of the groups start pairing off and becoming like pirate captains.
Mm-hmm.
And some people who were just captains of their own crews already have them, but they're like, there's, you know, the Bartow Club, and it's got 17 people. And then there's the Tontada tribe, and they've got, you know, 200
people.
200 or something. Yeah. And there's like a bunch. And some of the other ones, like the long arm guy, is like becomes the captain of two other of them, you know, and they're like, anyway, they all kind of branch off and they're all like, okay, we vow to follow you, Luffy, is what they're saying. And he's kind of like, huh? And that's where the episode ends.
Yeah. So this seems like a pretty significant moment.
Yeah.
So like we already knew that like for that many of the emperors have like not only their own pirate crew, but like allied fleets.
Yes.
You know, other pirate crews that are basically like, we are the such and such pirates, but we are basically one of the crews under Whitebeard or whoever. So Luffy is not an emperor. I don't know how you decide when you become an emperor, if you just take out another one, but like, this is the start of Luffy seemingly getting his own fleet. Like, it's not just the Straw Hat Pirates anymore. It's the Straw Hat Pirates and these other pirates that basically have sworn fealty to him.
Yes.
So like the beginnings of a fleet. So that seems, if you're trying to become king of the pirates, that seems like a hurdle that needed to get surpassed at some point. So seemed pretty important.
So we'll see. We'll see a little more of this.
Luffy was kind of dumbfounded.
Yeah, we'll see more of this next episode. I know exactly what happens in the next episode. It's more related to this, so won't say anything more than that. So stay tuned. But yeah. Yeah, that's pretty much it. I think they've, at this point, pretty much made it. They're not in risk anymore of being, because now, you know, Fujitora has given up his chase, so they're on their way out.
Now, I'm trying to remember, I'm sure this will come up again. I feel like my memory is bad, but also I got to realize that, like, One Piece is so slow, so this probably happened, like, 6 months or a year ago. Mm-hmm. So, Law is the one that told... or the other Straw Hat Pirates went to Zoe and they were trying to avoid Big Mom. Is that right?
That is correct.
And then somehow, I'm assuming someone's got to tell Luffy to, like, that's where they went. Like, does he know where they are or where the rest of his crew is? I don't remember.
You know,
like, does he know where, like, Sanji and Nami and Chopper are? Like, knowing him, like, I don't know if he goes there, if he goes a different direction. I don't know. So.
I want to say they know that, but I'm not.
I'm just trying to remember. Yeah, like I'm saying, I feel like my memory is bad, but also I got to remember, like, that was literally, like, 80 episodes ago. So.
I'm going to look something up real quick here, because I want to.
I just don't remember if Luffy knows where the rest of his crew is. Like, was he ever told?
I think that was the plan. I think the plan was that.
Okay. Yeah.
I think the plan was for them to go. Yes.
Okay. See, this is where if you are Oda, I'm assuming you have copious notes, like who knows what.
I mean, there are reasons they go there, but I don't know if the specific reasons had been said. I think that's what it is. We haven't said specifically why they need to go to this place.
Okay,
but I think they're aware that that's where they went. I'll leave it at that.
And I assume this will be explained in the next couple of episodes.
Yeah, probably a little longer than that, unfortunately, because I think there's like a mini non-canon thing that's about to happen. Let me double check this. We talked about this a while back.
It sort of makes sense that I know One Piece doesn't really have filler arcs, but occasionally they'll have like these mini arcs where they like do like a movie build-up thing or whatever.
Yeah, let me look here. See, the next episode I know is canon because I know what happens in that one. And then the one after that.
So we're on episode 744.
Okay. Yeah, I think this next thing that happens. So there's 745 is canon, and 746 might also be canon. Let me read the synopsis here. Okay. I think that
I'm just going to, I'm going to share a screenshot here. So there is a little filler arc coming up.
Yeah.
In a couple of episodes. I'm just seeing the titles here, so I don't think I'm spoiling myself.
Well, I'm looking at, I think 747 looks like a filler title to me.
So this is what I see.
Yeah. Those are that's the five filler episodes I was talking about. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Luffy and Barto's great adventure. Okay.
Yeah.
Sure. Why not?
That sounds like it would be too, because that's when. Yeah. Anyway. Yeah, that's filler. We're gonna have a five episode filler, and then we're into the next arc. And I know that after the 750, I think 751 is. Let me double check, but I'm pretty sure that is 100% the beginning of the next arc. So we're like five episodes away. Yeah, that's it. So the question is, quick question for you. Think they're going to roll right into the next arc?
What do you mean?
Toonami.
Oh, do you think that they maybe only like got enough One Piece episodes to finish Dressrosa and then they might cut it?
Just throwing it out there.
I'm gonna guess no. It seems like, so these episodes are old. Like I can even see on this list I pointed here. These episodes originally aired in 2016, so they're almost a decade old from their original Japanese airing.
Yeah.
I have to imagine if I am Toei, and we think these come straight from Toei, like they're not Crunchyroll. Or I guess, does the Crunchyroll logo play when it ends? I don't remember.
I think, well, it has the Toei animation. I don't know if the Crunchyroll end. I can look.
Maybe not. Anyways, I have to imagine if you're Toei and you're in charge of like the rights to this show, it's like, who else is going to be asking for episodes 700 through 800 of One Piece? Like, I feel like you should just take the money that it costs for, that Toonami can afford to buy it, to keep airing it. But unless Toonami just literally cannot afford it, whatever they're asking for, and Toei's not willing to play ball at all, then maybe. But I'm going to just assume it's staying, kind of like how Naruto stayed forever. I'm going to assume that One Piece will basically just stay as an anchor.
Yeah.
That's my guess.
And for the record, double checking here at the beginning as well. No, it just plays the Toei animation at the end.
The little cat guy?
Yeah, their mascot. We don't see a Crunchyroll logo, so.
Oh, okay.
So maybe this is directly coming from Toei.
But I'm going to guess that now that Naruto Shippuden is done, that this is basically like just an anchor for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, I hope
until
so.
Until Toonami is dead.
I've been looking. I mean, I don't think the next art is like the most amazing or anything, but I do kind of enjoy it just because it's different. And it's not a very long arc either. It's actually one of the shortest One Piece arcs.
Well, I'll take that after Dressrosa, it's just okay.
I could be exaggerating or reading too much into it, but I felt like after Dressrosa, which at the time was the longest arc ever in One Piece, I think Oda was like, okay, I can't do that again. I gotta kind of have a smaller arc here. So this was actually one of the shortest. So, okay. All right. Well, that is the block. Did you have anything that stand out this week as far as like flavor alerts?
Play flavor alert.
Potential award nominations.
Oh, yeah, let's see. Dragon Ball, not really. Dandadan. Best moments. Soba fight.
Oh, I kind of like that. I mean, we can.
Sure, why not?
Okay.
You can always knock it off later. Just, why don't we want to call it? Just like Soba.
Soba ranting.
Soba argument.
Soba argument, yeah.
I don't think anything else in the episode was like... I'm assuming we'll have some stuff happening in the next episode that might be cool.
I don't know. I have no
Silky
idea.
Arya or Ira.
Ira, yeah. I don't know.
And the opening of the show shows this like red-haired guy. And like, when does he show up? So
yeah. You know what though? I swore a couple episodes ago, I swore we saw him briefly.
Oh, maybe.
And like, I think he was like on TV or something. Like he was a celebrity.
Oh.
Yeah. I thought he was on like a TV screen or something.
He might show up at like the very end of this 12 episode run, and then he may be more prevalent in the second half. But he's in the opening for this.
Well,
There's only four episodes left. 9, 10, 11, 12 for the season.
He might show up in the second to last episode.
Yeah, right.
Have like a two-episode introduction to him or something.
Yeah.
Looking.
Nothing in Bleach. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't think the fights between... Like, for best fight, like, do you want to add hits Gaia versus I just out of obligation. No, I don't think these fights were really very.
No,
they just no. They were kind of like
the stakes don't feel good in these fights because I feel like we're just kind of going back and forth.
Yeah,
it's just like they're
not over yet. So
yeah, you beat me, I beat you. You beat me, I beat you.
Maybe there will be a cool one that comes up that stands out after this new Quincy power up that they just got.
Yeah.
But right now, they just kind of feel like almost like pro forma, like just for the, okay, we have so many Soul Reaper captains and we have so many Stern Ritter Quincy's that we're going to have to pair them off. Maybe we'll see if one of them, just one of these conflicts really stands out. So far, we basically have two main ones. We have Ice Boy versus other guy and then Soy Phone versus robot. And like neither of those is, nah, they're not very remarkable. Blue Exorcist. I don't know if that's a moment.
Yeah, a twist.
Nah,
I don't know. I don't know. I don't think it was like a best of anything. No. I think it was just like a oh wow, okay, surprise. Biggest surprise.
It's like a plot turn. It's like a turn in the plot, but I don't know if it's necessarily like a best moment or anything like that. So
yeah, I agree.
And nothing for One Piece.
No, One
Piece. So I don't think we need anything this week. And there's no like character for like best character or best voice, I think.
I probably should pay more attention to some of these Stern Ritter names because I bet some of them are pretty funny.
I looked up actually some of those Bleach names. Ikkaku is the bald guy. His friend is Yumichika. And 69 is Shuhei.
Shuhei.
I looked it up. I knew it was Shu something. I would not have remembered Yumichika. I didn't look up that female Stern Ritter's name.
You say Shuhei, I think of Shuhei Yoshida.
Yeah.
A PlayStation guy. Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah. I'm not thinking of, nothing's jumping out for me. I wasn't disappointed by anything this week. Yeah. All right. Okay. Well, if that's the case, then we can go ahead and just wrap up the episode. That will do it for episode 441. Thank you for being here, Seda.
Yep. No problem.
And thank you, Crocodile, for being here for the time you could earlier. And we will return next week. Again, same lineup, nothing's changing, for episode 442. And until then, later.